You do all this, and all, if initially this one pillar was driving 100% of the revenue, what do you think happens when you add seven more? And each one only adds 5% or 20%. Guess what that gives you? Geometry. Quantum leaps. Blowing past the competition. Gaining enrichment. Bedazzling potential investors with your savvy and cognizance of how to really drive business and the meaning of business life. Now, one final point. If you get this far, which I hope you will, because it's easy, easier than the way that most people do it, much less dangerous, you can go one more round of geometric integration. You can build a power Parthenon under each of these. Remember I talked about 93 referral systems? You can have, maybe not 93, but 10 different referrals, usage referral systems. You can use direct mail 5 or 10 ways. One to get leads, one to sell an introductory product direct, one to set up appointments, one to invite people back, one to follow up and sell them something afterwards, and on and on and on and on and on. Does that make sense? I'm going to try to give you a quick, really powerful compression on how to use this in raising money. First of all, remember, take the risk away, much easier to invest. Next, realize one thing. There's more money out there right now than there probably has ever been, but it's not being deployed very often because most of the investments suck and the people asking for the money are theoretical optimists who don't have a clue the meaning of business life. If you can demonstrate in your proposals, in your business plans, in your savvy, that number one, you understand the analytics, the metrics, and the dynamics better. Number two, that you've hedged it 18 ways to Sunday. Number three, you've taken away the risk and can layer it and stage it so that they really understand that you're looking at it from their side of the table. You have 10 times, or maybe 100 times, or maybe 1,000 times the probability that other people do it. If you get the you attitude, realizing they don't care about what you care about. They care about what's going to make certain the product or the service or the company works. They want to know what's going to make certain that if they don't make $1 trillion, they don't lose all their capital.
It's pretty simple, but it's pretty powerful. Don't you agree? Now, I pray you not only live it, but you systematically implement this and learn it a lot faster and before or instead of your competitor. Because truthfully speaking, the companies I've trained in this methodology, the business owners and professionals I've taught this strategy and these systems, the people walking this business earth that are living the strategy of preeminence, literally they are the leaders in their field, they are the highest performers in their category, they are the winners of the Inc. magazine Entrepreneur of the Year award winners in the fastest growing companies. We'll continue with more powerful mastermind marketing strategies in the next session. Let me ask you a provocative question. How'd you like me to transform you in the next few minutes into an absolute certified marketing and strategic genius extraordinaire? Somebody who never, ever, ever again makes the wrong decision, the wrong choice. Somebody who never chooses the wrong presentation, the wrong promotion, the wrong marketing, the wrong advertising, the wrong anything. Somebody who always knows the right decision to make, the right approach to take, the right choices to make, the right things to say, the right everything in every element of the revenue generating side of your business. And actually in many, if not every element of your personal life too. Don't want it? I know you'd love to have it. Well, I'm going to give it to you right now. I'm going to teach you the simple, disarmingly elegant science of testing 101. Testing is nothing more than methodically putting to a vote one supposition against another. Here's a really fascinating, almost stunningly startling insight. When you comparatively test one approach to doing something saying something, presenting something, expressing something against another, you will almost always find that one will outproduce or perform the other by margins as high as, are you ready for this, 21 times. Let me say it differently. One approach to doing the same thing, saying the same message, making the same sales approach, expressing the same benefit, writing a letter, sending an email, dispatching a fax, producing a brochure, and about 100 other areas can have the impact of changing its outcome by as much as 21 times. One approach, the wrong approach, can produce X yield. The better approach can produce up to 21 times more sales, 21 times more leads, 21 times more people saying yes to no, 21 times more people calling you on the phone, 21 times more people saying, yes, I'd love to make an appointment to have your salesperson call, 21 times more people coming to your event, 21 times more people walking into your booth at a conference. When you've got that kind of instantaneous and easily identifiable upside leverage available, don't you think you owe it to yourself to find it? Of course you do. So how do you do it? Simple, my good friend. You test. You test everything imaginable. Let me tell you some of the things that you test if you're a J. Abraham optimizer and a performance maximizer. First thing you do is you test one headline against another, because in all the areas of experimentation you'll ever do, you will find that headlines or their equivalent tend to be as much as 80% of the impact or the outcome in the resulting activity. Now, headlines are a linear concept. Let's talk lateral. Headlines don't have to be literally the big, bold cluster of words preceding an ad in a display ad. Headlines are anything that is the articulation or the expression or the opening communication that you make in any selling communication you do, written, print, in person, Memorex, on the phone. For example, the first paragraph that is uttered when a salesperson picks up the phone and contacts somebody for an appointment or for their attention to make a presentation is the equivalent of a headline. The first statement that is uttered when somebody calls in your order phone to purchase or make an order is the equivalent of a headline. The first statement that is uttered when somebody walks by your booth at a trade show is a headline. The banner that you display at that trade show is a headline. The first line or paragraph of a sales letter or a promotion piece is the equivalent of a headline. The first paragraph or the first words on the front of a brochure or a catalog is a headline. Headlines have been scientifically and clinically determined to hold up to 80%. That is 80. That is 4/5 of the impact of the whole success of your selling activity. And yet almost nobody understands the purpose of a headline. The purpose of a headline or its equivalent is to denominate the payoff, the benefit, the reason why, biggest self-serving outcome or advantage or reason that the intended client or prospect would want to basically avail himself or herself or their company of your product or service, or at least would want to know more or read more. It is not some nebulous, purposeless expression. The headline should be the best denomination of an outcome. It should be the how to get this, or a denomination of a payoff. In other words, how to double your productivity, triple your efficiency, cut your time expenditure in half while tripling your profitability, or how to learn Spanish like a diplomat in just 4 hours, or how to assure that your house will never flood, or how to turn your body into a temple, or how to eliminate stress completely and improve your energy by 3 times more. You get the idea. The trick is to figure out how to make your headline denominate the greatest outcome. When you test different headlines, you will find one outpulls another by a huge margin. The minimal we even rarely see is 20, 30, 40% different, one against another. But headlines are only one thing you test. The way you open, I mean, when somebody walks by your booth saying one thing and saying another can make a difference of 4, 5, 10 times. For an example, I had a client one time that increased sales 500% just by testing the opening phrase their salespeople began with in their retail furniture stores when people walked in the door. They tested 5 different variations. The winning one was not, "Can I help you?" or "What can I do for you?" It was, surprisingly, "What ad brought you into the store today?" That resonated. That galvanized them. That was no nonsense. It's like, what are you here to buy? The payoff they wanted was they wanted to find something very specific. They came in from an ad for a price or a product or a suite of furniture. It is by getting right to the bottom line, proved the winning combination. Now, when you test headlines, you will find all kinds of surprises. You cannot determine what's going to work by a committee. You cannot let your intuition rule, because when you do, fully 25% of the successful winners, the superior performing variations you test will be the ones that are counterintuitive, the ones that you would have never in a million years expected to work. Some of the other things you have to test: headline always first and its equivalent, however it's applied. Then the positioning. What is the whole premise you're building your whole approach around? It may be the wrong one. Changing positionings, changing the premise can have an outcome of increasing or reducing the impact by as much as 300%. That's why certain salespeople sell 10 times as much. Some of them are, yes, talented, but it has to do scientifically more when you reduce it down to the proposition and the premise one is using over the other. That's why you've got to really identify who are the high performers and figure out what they do better than other people and get the other people following suit. The next thing you want to test, pricing. Surprisingly, changing one number in the price can impact or enhance the effect by 500%. We found that by changing prices from $17 to $19, for example, we tripled results. We found one time by changing from $17 to $15, we quintupled results. We found when we tested $69, $89, $99, and $109 for a financial newsletter, that $69 outpulled all the other ones by 500%, that $89 outpulled all the other ones by 300%, and that $109 killed us. It only produced about 1/3 the yield. And yet if you arbitrarily pick a price, then you could be denying yourself so much more success, and in the process denying so many more deserving clients the chance to work and be protected and be advised by your company. You can't do it. You do not have the right. If you have in your organization other people who have hitched their wagon to your star, team members, vendors, family members, loved ones, husbands, wives, kids who are depending on you to maximize their future, you can't allow any factor in your success system to underperform. You can't allow anything to suboptimize. That's why you got to test. You test headline. You test proposition or premise. You test prices. You then test guarantee. You test basically how you denominate what satisfaction looks like and how you take the risk away. I've seen full guarantee outperform abstract money back satisfaction-based guarantee by 400%. I have seen better than risk-free guarantee where you add a bonus to the transaction, you give them that bonus to keep even if the product doesn't match up to their expectations or doesn't deliver the outcome they're expecting. I've seen that triple results. You test call to action. Surprisingly and ironically, most people are timid and tepid in their selling approach, whether it be the live salespeople, whether it be a sales letter, whether it be a phone sales call, whether it be an order department, whether it be a catalog. They don't bring the transaction to conclusion. Testing call to action, telling people what to do, why to do, how to do it, step by step, what the benefit will be when they do it, why they've got to do it now and not later. Those factors will have a profound positive impact. Again, that one area, that one factor alone could increase results 3, 4, 500%. There are a number of other variables you can test, but when you test one against another, you're going to find that if there are 100 variables you test, each one you're going to find impact 20, 30, 40%. Guess what? Surprise, surprise, I just added an entire additional layer, an entire new dimension to this concept of geometric business growth. Because if you test headline and you find one that's going to outpull the one you've been using or its equivalent by 50%, if you test the proposition and then you find that one proposition improves success and sales by 30%, you test money-back guarantee and find that one new one that you come up with adds three times as many people buying as before because it's three times more compelling and eliminates their resistance and their apprehension by 300% more. You test a call to action, you find that gets 20% more people buying. Guess what? It's just like the three-way to grow a business model. 10%, 10%, 10%, or 25%, 50%, 40%. It's just like the Parthenon where 15, 20, 30% impacts. It's another way to add geometry. And guess what? When you add geometry to geometry to geometry, what do you think you get? You get unbelievable, extraordinarily stratospheric, marvelously, positively explosive geometric growth. One company tested a new product coming out just as an existing product. They tested positioning it as a brand new revolutionary product. They tested offering it to the first 1,000 people as a beta test experiment to try to get the word out and give them a discount. They tested it as a companion product to another generic type of a product that was always out there to embellish and amplify its impact. And they found that the beta test outpulled the other three examples by 2/3 more. Well, that means 2/3 more people saw themselves connected to being an experimental model and wanting to be basically early adopters, and it really inspired them to take action. Had they not tested that proposition and that premise, they would have 2/3 less beginning customers getting the word out, spending money, using the product, reusing it. The key point to recognize here is twofold. I told you earlier that my whole philosophy on optimization and on geometric business growth stemmed from work I did years ago with the Deming organization. The Deming was the man that really came up with a lot of the production and manufacturing elements of optimization, and I was able to take his work and extrapolate it and modify it and apply it to the revenue generating side. Well, what Deming taught, and what I think is very important for you to recognize here and now, is this. Any enterprise has within it a number of finite elements or processes at work separately and together that are combined to drive the success and the performance or the lack of performance of that enterprise. And you may not know it's underperforming. Your first job is to isolate and identify what each and every primary process that's critical to your optimal success is. To isolate how that process is performing in your current business by measuring it and monitoring it. And then your job, your responsibility, your opportunity, and your obligation is then to comparatively, constantly move to improve and enhance it and replace whatever you've got now with higher performing options and alternatives. This takes place in many different arenas. I've used example now, a letter. You're looking at the headline. You're looking at the proposition. You're looking at the guarantee. You're looking at the call to action. You're looking at the benefits, all the different benefits that are delineated. Because a lot of people, when they're trying to sell in person, in print, on the phone, at trade shows, they mistakenly focus on the features of their product or service instead of the benefit. Earlier, remember in one of the sessions, I shared with you the fact that clients don't buy static things. They really don't buy products or services. They buy the results, the benefits, the enhancements, the protections those products or services deliver. The greatest, most fun example I can tell you is when somebody goes to a hardware store to buy a drill, they don't really want a drill. They want a hole. They really want a hole. Think about that as a mental model. So there are lots of processes in whatever selling system you employ, and also the expanded one you will employ when you add the three-way to grow a business model to your success strategy and you add then the Power Parthenon to it, that can be tested and identified. What I try to do is help people, first of all, identify and isolate all the key processes, then measure how they are performing, then find superior performing alternatives that they borrow again by going outside their business and looking at other fields, then figuring out by measuring which ones will do better, and then trying to improve them, and then constantly trying to continue that process and repeating it so you keep raising the bar.
The most wonderful, powerful, one of the most wonderful, powerful devices you have available to yourself is the power of testing. If you try different experimental ways of doing something, remember I talked about variables earlier when I talked about process improvement? But one way of doing something, one way of saying something, one price, one guarantee or lack thereof can make an impact of as much as 21 times. I tell a story, and it's true. I made $40,000 a month for about a half an hour's worth of work, and I got paid it for about 2 years just by changing the headline in one client's ad. I had a client years ago, again, in the gold business, another client. I did a lot of work in that field years ago. And they ran ads in the Wall Street Journal every day for what was called bank-leveraged bullion purchase. In other words, the bank would loan a big portion of the purchase on the gold if you wanted to pay a down payment or deposit, and the bank would hold it as a fiduciary for you and have a lien on it. And this company ran ads in the Wall Street Journal, and their headline said, 2/3 bank financing on silver and gold. When they ran the ad, they had enough response that they made profit, they paid for the ad, they paid commission, paid overhead, and they had profit left. I looked at it and said, that's a terrible ad. This is back when gold was selling for about $300 an ounce in the 80s, and silver was $6. And I said, there's got to be a better way to denominate the benefit or the advantage for the end user. And I said, if I can do it, can I have 25% of the increased profit? And they said, sure. And I said, okay. So I came up with 5 different experiments. One experiment was about 20% better, one was not any better, one was about twice better, and one was 500% better. And the one that was 500% better was so obvious and elegant, it's embarrassing. Remember I told you their previous headline. And by the way, the headline is the ad for the ad. It's the opening proposition, the payoff proposition, the benefit or advantage that you telegraph to the other side that they'll get from either listening to your presentation, reading your ad, reading your brochure, agreeing to an appointment, coming into your booth at your exhibit space. The headline that I engineered was the following. Remember, gold was selling for $300, silver was $6. Remember, theirs was 2/3 bank financing on silver and gold. What does that say to you? Not much. Mine said, if gold is selling for $300 an ounce, send us just $100 an ounce and we'll buy you all the gold you want. I did the same thing with silver. If silver is selling for $6 an ounce, send us $2 an ounce and we'll buy you all the silver you want. Well, if you realize that the equivalent of a headline, the opening line you uttered on a phone, in a meeting, at a booth space, in a sales letter, in an email, the reference statement on the email, the difference between somebody basically deleting it or reading it, putting it at the top of the stack or crumbling it, printing it or not, saving it or not. I mean, the leverage in each one of these gives you leverage is like 21 times. One time I was involved with a publishing company and we tested 6 different prices for a newsletter. One was $125, one was $69, one was $79, one was $59. $69 outpulled every other price by 400%. 4 times more just by having a different price. We tested one time risk reversal. How you say or how you denominate or how you articulate the guarantee or the fact that transacting business with us, there's no or there's little or there's better than little risk. One way we did it, tripled sales. Each one of these examples, there's thousands like it I've experimented with and analyzed, but each one of these gives you leverage on leverage on leverage.
Now, I'll give you a couple of easy examples in some other applications so you can get excited. I have doubled the sales of selling organizations in as quick as 24 hours just by bringing all the salespeople together, figuring out what the key processes were in their field, i.e., identifying prospects, contacting prospects for appointments, making the presentation at the appointment, sending out the material that went before the appointment and after, closing the sale, upselling other products or services, focusing on different products or markets, bringing other purchases to bear, reselling the client. I've studied who is good at what things, from referral generating to industry specific to product specific. And I've tried to figure out what they did best. Then I've gone out and I've studied the higher performers in other industries that did that. And I figured what they did differently. Then I've taken what they did differently, taught it to the people who were doing it, let's say, less effectively, got them to test what happened when they tried presenting for one full day the new way against the old, or got one salesperson presenting one way against the other salesperson presenting the old way, and been able to show them through definitive test comparison that one approach will so dramatically and monumentally outproduce the other that it's shameful, it's sacrilege, it's embarrassing to underperform, underachieve, underprofit, undersell your potential by unintentionally accepting the suboptimal, lesser performing factor or process. So I want you to look at your business. I want you to get a pad and paper. Look at all the impact points, all the processes, all the different factors going on, consciously or unconsciously. For example, every day you may have 500 people calling in with questions or information. You may have 400 people walking in. You may not recognize that is a process that can be improved, that right now you may unscientifically, unsystematically, informally, and sort of ad hoc, you know, every person and man and woman for themselves doing whatever they want to do, dealing with it. That's not scientific. That's not strategic. That's not maximizing. That's minimizing. When you start identifying what the processes are, who's doing what, who's doing it best, what they do the rest of the people don't, who does it better than they do outside your industry or your market, taking those and experimenting, measuring, monitoring, analyzing, replacing, improving, you're in for the profit, growth, experience, and adventure of a lifetime. So you have to agree that you're going to start testing. When you test, you can only test one variable against another. If you test multiple variables at the same time, you will end up with an inconclusive and confusing test that's not accurate. When you test one headline against another in a really clean environment, you will find one outproduces another by a big margin. If you can't do a definitive test, meaning if you can't go out and put two salespeople at work doing it one way and two salespeople another way, have a salesperson try it one day one way and one day another, or for 50 calls one way or 50 calls another, or try 50 people on the phone approached one way or 50 the other, or try 50 postcards presenting your approach one way or 50 the other. In a world that's not black and white, and our world is not black and white, it's gray. If you can't be definitive, you at least want to be indicative. If you see that something looks to show life, then you want to be more sophisticated in refining and re-verifying its effect. But if you constantly commit to testing, measuring, monitoring, comparing, replacing, improving, continuing, and repeating the process in as many important impact points and leverage processes in your revenue chain, you are going to become a geometric growth animal. You're going to basically have everybody else in your sector, in your industry, in your field, scratching their head in bewilderment, not having a clue how and what you're doing, but just knowing you're eating their lunch, you're serving them dust, you're doubling and tripling and quintupling and doubling again every year, and you're just running rings around and you're having fun doing it while they're struggling and striving and operating with the wrong precepts and the wrong focal beliefs and the wrong paradigm. And this is going to be so much fun, but you've got to constantly commit to testing continuously and testing systematically every important variable that can have an impact on your business. We'll continue with more Mastermind Marketing Strategies in the next session. Earlier in this program, I talked to you about the difference between being strategic and tactical. Well, nowhere is that distinction more critical than in assessing where you're going with your business. So often I meet people and say, oh, we want to grow our business. Oh, we want to make a lot of money. Oh, I want financial wealth. And I say, okay, well, what does that look like? They look at me bewilderedly and say, well, what do you mean? And I say, well, if you can't paint to me a clear and accurate picture of where you're trying to get to and also where you're at, I can't help you get there. If, for example, you want great wealth, and great wealth to you means $2 million a year, and right now you're making $100,000, if something doesn't change, I got to look at your current model and say, okay, with what you're doing right now, for it to produce for you 20 times more income, you've got to have 20 times more people, 20 times more facilities, 20 times more cash in the bank, 20 times more salespeople, 20 times more ads. Or, then I give you the alternatives. You can shorten that process. You can eliminate or reduce that timeline. You can eliminate or reduce much, if not most, or all of the capital or the personnel requirements by replacing that current model with a far superior strategic geometric growth model. But you can't possibly, you certainly won't effectively, and you absolutely won't strategically get to where you're going if you first don't tell me where it is and be very specific. I don't want to know that you just want to get more successful. I want to know what success looks like to you. Earlier I talked about defining and delineating what satisfaction looks like to somebody else. And a good model would be not saying I'm going to sell you vitamins and you're going to feel better, but saying, okay, let me tell you what life's going to be like when you got these supplements at work. You're going to get up with more energy. You're going to look more robust. People are going to tell you how young and fresh you look. You're going to have 10 times more energy. You're going to want to get to work at 8 in the morning instead of 9. You're going to feel great at 6 o'clock when you used to be dead at 4. You're going to come home and be attentive. You're not going to freak out and be stressful, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the same delineation of what success looks like, you've got to decide to do for yourself. You got to paint a picture that is so clear, because without knowing what it's supposed to look like at the end, and I don't mean when you die, and I don't mean when you retire, I mean when we get what you're talking about aspiring towards or achieving, I can't paint the picture. I got to know what it looks like, and then we got to work backwards and evaluate all the different options we've got to get there, because, if you're asking me why, because there are a lot of different avenues to the same outcome. You ever go on a trip? I live in Los Angeles. Sometimes we go to Mexico. When we go to Mexico, we've gone three different ways. We have driven. We have flown. We have taken the train. Actually, gone four ways. We have taken a cruise ship. You can take a helicopter. Depends on the speed, the joy, the experience, the cost. Same applies to you. First of all, knowing where you want to go and making that realistic, because a lot of growth is very unrealistic. For a lot of you, you don't possess the skill set or the comfort levels with the requirements necessary to affect the kind of growth that would be necessitated if you don't change your strategy. If, for example, your current business model only has one way to grow a business, you only have salespeople out there, you basically are making $100,000 a year with three salespeople in the field and you want to make $1 million, you're going to have to grow so much more that way. There are shortcuts by replacing those mechanisms with higher performing, higher yielding, more residual based alternatives like we talked about earlier. Well, in order to do that, you got to first assess where you are to know where you're going, and you got to know what the fastest, safest, most joyous route for you is. I call this really forging your personal optimal success strategy. And what I believe, it's very important here, what I believe is your optimal success strategy is totally, absolutely, and diametrically different than any other business owners or professionals. Why? Because there'll be different elements you'll be comfortable with. You may not want to manage a lot of salespeople. You may not want to have a lot of money in inventory. You may not want a big facility. You may not want an office you have to go to. You may not want expensive advertising that you need to deploy. You got to figure out what you want and what you don't want, and then you've got to comparatively integrate that with reality into what options and opportunities and alternatives have the highest probability of giving you what you want, and not choose the ones that are going to give you what you don't want. It's that simple. Towards that end, there are some critical questions I think you need to ask yourself to make sure that you're in alignment, to assess where you are versus where you want to be, and to get everything really on an integrated plane so that you're ready to really be absolutely strategic and really work on a geometric focus, not a linear one. Here's some of the questions. First question. Ask yourself, what initially got you started in your business or career? What was the motivation? What was the occurrence? What was the stimulus? What was the reason why? What was the goal? Because until and unless you can reconnect with what gave you the most passion, purpose, and sense of possibility back in the beginning when it was nothing but a glint in your eye, you can't possibly move to the next level to get it to where it really wants and deserves and needs to be, because you gotta redeem and you gotta remount that same level of passion, purpose, and possibility. The next question. When I first started out, where did my clients or business emanate from? And what that means is, what did I do? Did I call on 100 key influencers in my community? Did I go to every kind of organizational meeting? Did I send press releases to all the newspapers? Did I go out and knock on every door? And then as I got more successful, did I unintentionally forget or stop or cease doing all those same things that initially drove my success? Why this is important is just by redeeming and reconnecting to what got you to the level of success you're at now, which oftentimes we suspend or dramatically slow down doing after we hit success, you can just by ramping that up automatically double or triple your business, because so often what got us to where we are, we forget. We alone become the driving force in the beginning, and then we become the managing force because we become this jack of all trades, the breadwinner, the cook, the bottle washer, the everything, and we stop replicating the very premise that got us to the level we're at today. Just by remembering, redeeming, remounting that same force and activity, we can double our business almost overnight. So go back in time and remember what drove the business to the level it's at today and ask yourself, am I doing anywhere close to that same level continuously myself or through other people or other activities to sustain and expand and enhance its effect? Next question. Why in the beginning did clients originally buy from me and my business? There was a reason in the beginning. Could have been your ability to explain what your payoff was. Could have been your passion. Could have been your hand-holding. There was normally some predominant factor or combined factors that caused people to buy from you in the beginning. Next question. Why do they buy from me now? Is it for the same reason? Have I got complacent? Is it a different reason? Has the world changed? Have I stopped focusing on that? Have I replaced it with something else? Should I, could I, must I go back to the basics? Is what I'm doing now better or worse? Until you ask definitive questions, until you examine, evaluate, assess what you're doing consciously or unconsciously, strategically or non-strategically, implicitly or explicitly, that may be holding you back, thwarting your success, limiting, restricting your results, you aren't going to know how to unleash the opportunity, the possibility, and the enormous performance force that is just waiting, idling in neutral right now. Next question. What primary method of generating clients was used to build my business career? What's the single most critical pillar you originally used that built basically your diving board theory? Next question. Which of my marketing or sales efforts brought in the bulk of my sales or clients? Was there a different effort, even though maybe you did advertising? Did most of it really come from word of mouth, but you never analyzed that? So you wasted most of your money. You wasted almost all of your efforts and your creative attention and your energy just because you never analyzed and asked that question? Next question. This is close to home in our last section. Do I test the various aspects of my marketing and selling activities and processes constantly to make sure they're producing the highest and best and most profitable outcome and results? And if they're not, do I travel outside my industry and my field to uncover, identify, and recognize new principles, processes, and approaches I can import and apply and adapt and adopt and really use in my business? Next question. How well connected or how involved am I with my clients at the sales, networking, or transactional level? In other words, do I get on the phone and take orders? Do I go in the field and make sales? Do I call once every quarter my best clients? Do I know who the inactive ones are, the ones who stop buying? Do I call them and try to bring them back to life? Do I really go out with my salespeople? Do I call my satisfied clients and pick their minds? Do I invite them to lunches or dinner meetings? Or do I just sort of complacently and passively and idealistically stay up in the ivory tower of my office or the executive suite, letting everyone else do it getting more and more and more removed every day in a negative geometric progression from all the people I want to really be connected to, the people I now realize I love and adore and in business to serve. Where do my current clients come from specifically today? Demographics, industry. Have I ever searched? Have you looked through your client list and find out that surprisingly 25% of them are doctors and yet you've never targeted doctors? You've never gone to the doctors and asked them to refer more doctors? Just the discovery process will open up floodgates of potential for you. Next question. Who else benefits from your success, excluding your clients, your employees, your family? When you're successful, who else benefits? Your vendors, the families of all the people that buy your products. We've actually been able to show people that shareholders galore, tens of thousands of shareholders benefit when my clients' products are sold to public corporations. They get more productivity, more profitability because everybody benefits. So they saw a much higher connection to the holisticness of the transaction. Next question. How many of my suppliers or business colleagues could and would be motivated to help me grow my business far more because and if I took more time and effort to point out to them and to connect them and bridge them to the fact that it would help grow their business and their success and their security and their wealth and their happiness more too? And if so, what do I have to do it? Next question. When I create a new client for my business or profession, who else have I directly created a new client for? This opens up a vast area of connections you can make to help grow your business for you, but only if you identify who they are. Who else benefits when you benefit? Who benefits during, before, after somebody avails themselves of your product or service? Next question. Describe to yourself completely what your business or career does. What you sell, how you sell it, who you sell to, why they buy it, why it's important. What niche, if any, or if many you serve, and why that niche really gravitates to you. Until and unless you really understand your role in the cosmos, in the business cosmos, you can't maximize, you can't multiply, you can't really do much of anything except for just go rudderlessly around and be a pinball in the game of life. Next, what is my business philosophy as it relates to my clients? And I urge and really recommend you don't just recant what I said. Use what I taught you as a model, as a framework, as a template to build your own optimal, customized, individualized, heartfelt, passionate, pulsating, personalized belief system. And then you articulate it clearly. And when you've articulated, you think about what it means and you feel what it's like because it's a transformation. Next, how have my methods for doing business or the products or services I sell or market changed since the inception of my business? For the better, for the worse. Again, what you often find, not always, but about 80% of the time, is you have unintentionally and unknowingly fallen backwards, backpedaled, diluted, gotten disconnected, become more amorphous in what you do and how you do it and how your company or your practice connects with your marketplace. And by just doing this and questioning and connecting and answering those questions, it will basically reveal to you either, number one, that you got a big void you got to fill, or number two, that you're actually doing better, but you can even do more. Next question. What are my sales per employee or per person or per department or per category or per product or per industry served? Once and if and only once and if you know that, can you then start maximizing? What if you find that your sales to one industry are 10 times your sales to another? Duh. Does that mean just keep randomly selling to every industry or start going under siege and attacking the industry that's got 3 or 4 or 10 times the success? What if one product is selling 10 times as much, but you don't even know that? What if one salesperson is selling 10 times as much, but not reselling 10 times as much? It may be better to mobilize him or her in just opening new accounts. You can't know that if you don't ask that. You can't know that if you don't answer the question. You can't know that if you don't measure, monitor, evaluate, compare, etc. Next question. What's the biggest client complaint my company currently receives, and how do we successfully address, resolve, and eliminate it, or do we? Do I even know? What is the second most frequent complaint? Not just the complaint you get to the salespeople, not just the complaint you get to the service people, not just the complaint you get to the order people, not just the complaint you get to the account management people, but all the complaints. Until and unless you know what the picture really looks like out there in the real world where they're living, because people only focus on what's important to them. If you don't know what's important to them, or you say, well, that's not important to me, I'm not going to deal with it, screw them, you're losing incredible connection. If you really want to fall in love with your clients, you want to know the world according to your clients. What is their reality? What are their values? What is their sense of importance? What is bothering them? What is pleasing them? What do they want more of? What do they want less of? How can you give it to them? How is it hurting you? Next question. What is our current unique selling proposition? Why are our clients buying from us and not our competitors? What do we do consciously or unconsciously? What's the advantage we hold out? You know, maybe just be you got a good location. Maybe you got one person who's got a delightful attitude. Maybe you got a really attractive person. People come because he or she is so much fun to look at or talk to or be in their aura. Whatever it is, you sure as heck better figure out and try to replicate and preserve and be able to reproduce, or you are compromised. Remember, case in point, the model of the diving board. That comes to bear in all kinds of other elements of your business activities. Next question. Is your USP a consistent theme in all your marketing and sales efforts? The biggest case in point that I use, and it's sort of a vulgar one, but did you ever go to a restaurant and the menu may be very clean, but you go to the bathroom and there's no towels or there's no soap or there's no toilet paper, and it's such an incongruent model? Well, a lot of companies will utter through their sales force or their sales communication, their ads, their sales letters, their catalog, that they are one thing, and yet the transaction with the sales department is diametrically different than the transaction the client ends up having with the shipping department, with the delivery department, with the service department, with the customer service department, with the accounts payable department. You need congruency between what you say you are from a benefit or advantage or unique selling proposition and what you deliver. Failure to be congruent is the kiss of death. Next, who are your biggest competitors and what do they offer or do differently or excel at that you don't? And is that something you can and should integrate into your business model, or do you have to counter program against it because they're so off the chart in their ability to excel at it? Next question, what is your competition's biggest failing, weakness, arrogance, or complacency? And how can you take maximum strategic and ethical advantage of it to help your client and prospective client excel? Next question. What do your clients really want? Be very specific. This is where you paint this picture of satisfaction as it really denominates to the client. Remembering, you get into their mind, you project forward in neuro-linguistic conditioning. They call it future pacing, where you go forward and describe what it's like to have the product or service that work in somebody's life or business. You want to know, what do they really want? And keep in mind, they don't buy the drill, they buy the hole. They don't want the features, they want the benefits the features translate to. Figure out what they want and then compare that to what you're offering, what you're saying, what you're doing. Reconcile the two. Isn't this fun? Next, do clients buy from me exclusively, or do they also patronize my competitors? Or do I even know? Am I afraid to ask? Why wouldn't you want to ask? You're their advisor. You got to know whether they're making the right decisions. You got to know whether they're being served well. You got to know whether they're buying the right combinations. And if you limit your vision to just the widget or gadget or single item you sell, shame, shame, shame on you. Next question. What's your true market potential? Do you even know? You know how many people are out there? How many prospects? Do you have a list? Do you know where they are? Do you know their names? Do you know their contacts? Do you have their phone number, their address, their fax number, their email number? Key contacts, or you're just sort of walking around in the ozone, you know, content, you know, that ignorance is bliss. Next question. What does it cost you now to get a new client? What are your marginal net worth capabilities? an important point. When it goes to focusing on marginal net worth or lifetime value, there is a wonderful, wonderful epilogue concept that I need to share now, and that is allowable cost. Once and only if you know what a client is worth to you initially, subsequently, and over the useful life. In other words, you know what you're going to make from them in profit first time they buy, how many purchases and corresponding profit they will yield in the first year or the first cycle of purchase, and finally, how many total cycles you can depend on to get from them. You don't yet know. Until you know that, you don't know how much you can afford not to spend but to, operative word, quote, end quote, invest to buy more clients. Once you do know that, all things being equal, then you have what's called an allowable cost. If you know, for example, that every time somebody comes in and buys a product for $100 that you make $50 on, they're going to buy 50 more products a year from you that you're going to make at least $50 a time from, and you've got decent cash flow, you could spend 100% of that $50. That's your allowable cost. That's what you could afford to invest. And truthfully, if you have deep pockets, you can invest a lot more than that and invest even in the future, in the second and third and fourth purchase, if you're absolutely certain those purchases will recur. But until and unless you know what your allowable cost is, you don't have a clue what you can spend. So any expenditure you make without that knowledge, whether you spend arbitrarily $10,000 a month on ads or 5% of sales on ads or 15% of profits on commissions or 5% of purchases on technical support, you're either spending too much or too little. Only when, if, and after you ascertain and formally identify your allowable cost can you do anything. But once you've got it, then it's the most wonderful realization you'll ever make, because once you know what you can afford to spend, you no longer have any limitations. You have an unlimited budget. If you can figure out mechanisms and methods and approaches for buying customers, remember all the different avenues on the pillars on the Power Parthenon, the geometric Power Parthenon, you can buy them all day long and infinitely, as long as they don't cost you any more than your maximum allowable cost. If you know that you can afford 100% of the first purchase, for example, or 100% of the first two purchases to buy customers, you can go to salespeople. You can double or triple the commission. And if the cash flow is short, you can say, I'll pay you half now. I'll pay the rest of it in the second and third purchase. When you know what you can afford to spend, you can buy new clients or new leads all day long. You also have to know what the correlation is between prospects and clients. If you know that every time you get 20 leads, you get 3 clients, but you've never analyzed that, and that 3 clients are worth $200 a piece, so that means 3 times 2 is $600, and 20 clients into $600 means that every prospect is worth to you literally 20 into 600 or $30 a piece, you could argue that you can afford to spend $30 allowable cost to bring in a quality prospect, and all day long do that, because every time you get 20 of them, you're going to get 3 clients, and those 3 clients are going to be worth X, and they're going to repurchase Y, and they're going to make you a fortune over and over again. It gets very interesting. It's not really complicated. It's all a bunch of elegantly simple connections and blocks connected and bridged together into a super strategic Power Parthenon strategy that all you got to do is put it into a system and work it. Next question. What is your biggest and best source of new business, and are you currently doing everything possible to secure this business? As I said earlier, if you know right now that out of 1,100 clients you've got, 800 came from referrals or word of mouth, and yet you're wasting and spending both 80% of your time and 90% of your marketing budget on ads that aren't even pulling, there's something wrong with this picture. You should mobilize all that time, all that energy, and whatever capital it takes to put into place formalized referral generating systems, because they're multiple times more valuable, more profitable, more certain, more predictable. And on and on and on. But you got to know best source, and then you got to reconcile. Are you following it? Are you applying it? Are you implementing it? Or are you basically doing something that makes the picture totally wrong? Next question. What has been your biggest single marketing success to date? Define it as a specific promotion or an advertising campaign or a sales gambit that you tried and worked. And the question is, just because it worked massively one time, did that mean you should drop it? Because most people have this extraordinary one-time experience and they'll never try to systematize it or formalize it. Do that, and all of a sudden, your results explode through the roof. Next question. How many better and more effective ways could you reduce the risk of transaction? How many ways could you lower the barrier of entry for a prospective client? How many ways could you reduce the hurdle so that clients could want to deal with you and say yes much easier than saying no, or I'll have to think about it? Until you know that, you can't eliminate risk. till you sit down with a pad and paper in your brain and all the issues that are keeping him back and make a list. What are the 5 or 10 or 12 tangible reasons they may be worrisome or fearful or apprehensive? What are the 5 or 10 intangible areas? What are the things that you've never thought about that'll make them look bad if they make a bad decision? What are the things that they have to worry about unwinding a bad decision besides just getting their money back? Until you know what those all are, you can't give them great risk reversal. You can't forge them together into a powerful hybrid. Next. After the initial sales, is there a system, a formal methodology that you've got in place that you constantly communicate, advance, enhance, and sustain the relationship? Scientific research I and 10,000 of my clients have done have proven beyond a doubt. By continuous, constant communication with your clients, you improve and increase the amount of purchases, the active life of the clients, the number of referrals, and their receptivity to all kinds of new products and services and recommendations you bring through your selling pipeline. But if you don't consistently and systematically, look at the rest of your life. You don't give up in the morning. You don't some days bathe and some days not, and some days brush your hair and some days not, and some days eat and some days not, and some days get dressed and some days not, some days put on your shoes and some days not, and some days get in your car and go to work and some days not, and some days pay your bills and some days not, and some days turn on the lights and some days not. Your life is very systematic. It's methodical. It is, to some degree, strategic. Maybe the wrong strategy, maybe not the optimal one. In your business, you've got processes, buying, inventorying, hours. You don't let people come and go as they want. You don't let them just claim any income they want. You've got systems and procedures. Why in anybody's name should it be any less critical to the revenue-generating side of your enterprise? It shouldn't. It couldn't. It can't. It mustn't. Next question. Do you have an adequate supply of client testimonials, endorsements, and success stories in written, in audio, and video form? Do you even know who's happy? Do you even know the tangible impact you've made? Do you even have a list? Do you even have success stories? Do you even have a book full of... I have 1,000 letters of testimonial. I have 500 interviews on tape. I have 25 incredible videos of broad spectrum of clients telling their story, telling the impact, telling firsthand, telling the tangible differences, measure, comparing, telling them what I meant to their lives when I got involved. What do you have like that? If you have nothing, then basically anybody believing in you is doing it on pure blind faith, pure conjecture. Would you buy that way, or do you want to know who else is satisfied? Do you want to talk to anyone? Do you ever want social proof, peer confirmation? Do you want to know what other people have realized when you're buying software? Don't you want to know what kind of productivity, what kind of performance, what kind of numbers, what kind of payback, what kind of ROI it gave? Why should your clients be any different in buying from you? Next, do you actively solicit referral business? If not, shame on you. Start immediately and use the systems we talked about. And if you need some, try out my 93 referral system, because if it doesn't produce results, you get your money back anyhow. Next question. Have you tried selling your list of unconverted prospects to other competitors on a joint venture? In other words, you've got all these people you've invested who are prospects, who are suspects, who you've either come in your store and not bought. Hopefully you've captured their name. Who your salespeople have called on and not converted. Hopefully you've got records. Who've inquired by mail for your catalog or your brochure but not bought. These people were and maybe still are interested generically in your area, but maybe not interested in you because maybe you've done something not to inspire them or not to answer their questions. The point is, first of all, you follow up more for yourself now with the methods and the mindset I've given you. If you can't sell them, make a joint venture with one of your generic competitors to sell them and give you the lion's share of the profit, and you can make more money from the people you don't sell than you will the ones you do. Next question. Do you make consistent efforts to communicate with your clients about what your company is doing for them? You can't expect your clients to appreciate, understand, or really revere what you're doing for them if you don't share it with them, if you don't connect it with a mental bridge that shows them why it's important. If you spend $1 million a year testing manufacturers, products, performance, consistency, if you spec construction standards that are 3 times the norm, if you spend $1 million a year flying around checking and rechecking manufacturing performance, but you don't tell any of that to your clients, they can't appreciate it. Whatever you do for them, they've got to know, and it's got to be done in a way where you constantly connect it in their mind to their ability to appreciate the implication and impact it has in their life. Next question. In what ways do I try to upsell my clients? Again, when you have a client that comes to buy something from you or you go to them, why in the world would you knowingly allow them to buy less than they should, in less combination than they should, less frequently than they should? You owe it to them as their advisor to make certain you have a system to upsell, to cross-sell, to do everything possible that will help them realize the maximum